Bad on Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. It's your host, Pat the Designer, back at it again, joined by Courtney Cronin. We will also have a very special guest on the crossover episode, another Eye on the Enemy episode coming your way. Got to see what's going on with the dog pound over there. They got some dogs on that defensive line, but also some injuries. And we got some here, Courtney. I'm not going to say major injury news. Of course, yesterday, Yannick Ngakoue, that's the major news. But there was a name on that injury report that Bears fans might not have expected to be there.
Yeah, DJ Moore not practicing yesterday. He has an ankle injury, which aligns with everything he told us post-game after the Lions win, that on that third carry he had in the third quarter, remember he exited the game for like a couple of snaps. He said afterwards that, you know, when he was getting tackled, he felt his ankle get twisted up a little bit, that he had to go to the sideline. You know, he didn't go in the injury tent. There wasn't any designation. It was a very brief thing. Like if you blink, you might have missed it because he was right back in there pretty soon after in the third quarter. But he said he was good. And then the Bears held him out of practice on Wednesday. Now they switched up their schedule. It was a lighter day. They were in helmets yesterday. Today they will be in shells to get a little bit more work in. So we'll see if it's just like a precautionary thing. But to see DJ Moore on the injury report with an ankle injury when he got injured as being used as a running back certainly makes you go, okay, it's a little risky to put your best offensive player in that position where he could get hurt like that. Maybe that'll make them want to like reel in those sorts of plays going forward. I think we only saw him with three carries on the day, the touchdown, the fourth and one, and then the one that he ended up getting hurt on. But, you know, I noticed it right away. Like he had a ski hat on, no helmet, and he was off to the side. He wasn't stretching. So you could tell pretty early on that he wasn't going to be doing anything at practice. But other than that, like on the injury report, it's pretty much like everything that we already knew. Equanimeous St. Brown, who has the pectoral injury, he was not practicing yesterday. Dylan Cole, for personal reasons, not there. And then Jaquan Brisker has a groin injury. He was limited, but, you know, we know that when he left the game in the first half, it sounded like it was more of a situation where he got the wind knocked out of him, not a groin injury. And, I mean, my goodness, you could understand him having a groin injury after 17 tackles. That's probably what it's related to, but, you know, not a full participant, but he was getting some work in yesterday. So we'll get a chance to see if he's able to build on that game against the Cleveland Browns. I would imagine so. I mean, he's a tough guy. He plays a very physical position and he plays it in a very physical manner, but just something to keep an eye on as they get ready for practice on Thursday.
I think that's the good thing about the names that we do have on this injury report. If there is a positive to look at from that, right? These are guys in DJ Moore and Jaquan Brisker who they both feel like you're going to have to take me out at the legs before you keep me out of a game. Right. And so even right, DJ Moore, we talked with J-Mac on the post game show. He said, you know, T-Med had took DJ's helmet and the equipment manager basically was like, you know, all right, sit down, get yourself checked out. And as soon as they finished doing whatever they were doing over, they snatches the helmet back, runs on the field. I believe right after that pretty much is when the touchdown came. No, it might have been a little bit later in the game. But right after that, I believe he made a big play. And those are the moments you look at.
Yeah, the catch down the home team sideline came like pretty soon after that. And no, he's not somebody that wants to be out of games. They can't afford to not have him in games either. True. So you have to factor that in. And I'm sure, you know, we'll get a chance to hear from Luke Getsy this morning. We'll see. You know, I'm curious about the rationale about using him in those situations, but also knowing the line that you have to balance where he's a receiver. He's not a, you know, 220-pound running back. The play design is great on that first one, but like then as you go along in the game, how do you know or how do you balance, I'm going to sprinkle this wrinkle in here. They might not be expecting it. It could be a quick first down for us versus I don't want to get my guy hurt and then not be able to utilize him in what he does best, which is catch passes, which is using that incredible body control, which is using that speed. You don't want to, you know, an ankle injury, you think, okay, hopefully he can still turn the jets on opposing defenders if and when he needs to, because he's such a big yak contributor for this Bears offense, and that's how Justin Fields has been able to generate a lot of his yards this season against an injured Cleveland defense. You know, there might be an opportunity to use DJ Moore in those situations more than we saw. I mean, obviously Justin Fields, you know, being able to string together some deeper passes is a good thing, but if you do need to turn to, you know, the short quick slants to get it out, and then rely on DJ Moore's speed, you just hope that the ankle wouldn't slow him down in those instances.
Yeah, and I think, by the way, I had a bunch of people correcting me about the Deontay Foreman, because I said 215, 220. He's 236, even more reason not to have your wide receiver running the football on a 4th-and-1, 6 foot, 236. And a bunch of people that were like, 215, go up, bud. So, listen, I think the Bears found something. I do want to say this, right? Like, because expect to see, maybe not this week, but expect to see down the line that first touchdown play design possibly yet again, because that is a design that can be used. You hand the football off to Fields. Maybe he throws a little pitch play over the top, right? Like, there's a bunch of things they can do off of that. I actually expect to see that one again, just not the 4th-and-1 one. I don't need to see that ever again. They've gotten
creative with their 4th-and-1s, and some of them have worked, some of them haven't. We talked the other day about that direct snap to Cole Kmet, that sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but I'll be very curious to hear from Luke Getsy about that play design in specific, because again, like, you can't have a momentum killer, and you hope that this team has been through enough of those situations where they know how to flush that play and not let it affect the momentum the way that it did at the end of the second quarter, or you know, throughout the remainder of the second quarter. But you can't put guys in situations where, I understand it's an unscouted look, it's something that you think could trick the defense, but you also got to take into account the effectiveness of those plays and, you know, not putting guys in situations where they might get dinged up. Even though he did it on that play, you just never know.
Now, before we get to our special guest, I do want to ask you one more question. Bears related about the Justin Fields comments, and you know, are we hearing anything from the NFL about this at all? Because this is something been consistent with Justin. He talked about, you know, I think it was, who was it after the game? It was Jaquan Brisker, I think, that came out and spoke up basically for him, saying he's getting hit after the play. We got to do something about this. You're going to get our quarterback killed. Justin kind of talked about that as well at the podium yesterday. What are your thoughts kind of on the comments, on some of the flags that that we haven't seen from Justin Fields? And do we expect any change to come? Because we see this a lot with guys who are runners, right? Lamar dealt with this. I'll say Josh Allen deals with this a little bit as well.
Yeah. And so, like, Jaquan Brisker on Monday, you know, he's been very vocal about this. I know that he does his own radio appearances throughout the week. He doubled down on what he said, that, you know, he just wishes that the officials would take into consideration when Justin Fields gives himself up as a runner to protect him a little bit more in those instances. And he went as far to say that, you know, the other teams are being told to, like, play him a certain way. And Fields was asked about that. He's like, I can't really speak on that. Obviously, he's not going to say, yeah, they're, like, trying to hurt me. Like, but I get it from a defender's perspective. That's an interesting thing to say, because he would, you know, he's played mobile quarterbacks before. How you defend a mobile quarterback like a Justin Fields is different than how you defend, you know, a Joe Flacco that you're going to face this weekend. So I thought that was, you know, an eye-opening comment that could also just be passion from a teammate trying to protect his guy. And I think that Fields kind of played it up the same way. To me, what stood out the most is, you know, you haven't heard Matt Eberflus double down and say the refs need to protect the quarterback, but our quarterback better. He's been very realistic about this. Of course, a defensive-minded head coach understands that in defending quarterbacks like a Justin Fields, there's a give and a take with that from the quarterback's perspective, that, like, once he gives himself, you know, up as a runner, that can make it a little tricky for the officials to know, you know, as far as, like, what, you know, anything more they can do to protect the quarterback. They're turning these plays in, they're talking to the officials before the game, but, like, what Flus was saying is that it's hard at times, because when Fields gets to the perimeter, you're so close to, you know, being inbounds versus out of bounds, and it's kind of that Patrick Mahomes argument of, like, the intent. Was the quarterback going out of bounds? Was he trying to stay in bounds? Like, do you get the 15-yard penalty for getting hit in those situations? Some quarterbacks do. Some quarterbacks don't. the bottom line is that there should be like no hit to the head, the shoulder area, all of that. And that's what the coaches are trying to preach before the game. Field says that he talks to the officials every single game. It's just, you know, when he says that he does that, and then the first play of the game, when, you know, it's a, you know, he keeps it and then he runs to his left, and then Jack Campbell, a very, very obvious late hit there when he's trying to tackle him, then Fields doesn't get the flag. It's kind of like, okay, like what more can the guy do?
Yeah.
And it's nothing new. I think it's been going on for him since his rookie year, and he knows that. And it's not a point that he wants to belabor, because he knows that, you know, if it hasn't gone his way at this point, it's probably not going to be something that's going to change drastically.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, especially, right, I think that it's more the head and neck area mm-hmm. that we've seen just repeatedly not get called. I think even after, right, like the one where he slides and then there's like he gets hit. I forget who makes the tackle, but he's basically got like his groin in his face pretty much.
Yeah,
like, and he's all over his head. Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's like, I get it. There's no intent there, but also that's a flag, boys. Like you have to keep these guys honest on the defensive end, because if you allow them to do it, they will. And that does concern me a little bit about Justin Fields, especially with the defense that we have coming in this week. And want to bring in Browns analyst Max Loeb, host of the Dog Check on Believe. He hosts it with former three-time Pro Bowler and two-time All-Pro running back Eric Metcalf. Let's welcome Max into the building. Max, what's going on, man?
Thank you guys for having me. I'm very, very excited to be here. You guys hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound great. Okay, you sound phenomenal.
Awesome. Yeah, very excited
almost
to be
like
here.
You do a podcast, man.
Yeah, 2 weeks in a row we've had guests on who have like their own mic, their own headset. You fit the bill. This is perfect. It's sweet. Like you do your own podcast.
Yes, something like that. But yes, I'm very, very happy to be on. Very excited to talk about this game. I think it's going to be an awesome game, to be honest with you guys.
I think this is going to be a defensive battle, even with some of the issues that the Cleveland Browns are dealing with. I mean, listen, when you started off, right, I felt like I was personally causing injuries because I refreshed Twitter 3 times. And every single time I refreshed Twitter, there was a new Browns injury that was popping up. But the one thing about the Browns that I found out after doing research on the team, digging a little bit deeper, is there's a lot of pieces in there that are still some high names, some high draft picks that they've looked to, right? Isaiah McGuire possibly coming off a practice squad. He was their 4th-round pick this year. There's some depth on this Browns team. What's the expectation for this defense, especially knowing that you have a guy in Myles Garrett who just makes guys' lives easier?
Yeah, I think the expectation probably won't change. I think defensively, the biggest two talking points, and what's crazy is the news of both of these guys being, actually Grant Delpit is not out for the season, but he's placed on IR. Mm-hmm. But you got the news of Grant Delpit being placed on IR. He was injured in the game this past week against the Jaguars.
Yeah.
I don't remember the time, but legitimately 6-7 minutes later, Obo Okoronkwo, he got like 5 sacks on the year, 4.5 sacks, their 3rd down pass rush specialist, out for the year. So I don't think the expectation will really change, but missing those two guys is going to be tough. However, it does seem like Denzel Ward will be back for the first time in 3 weeks this week. And to be honest with you, you'd be hard pressed to find better corners in the NFL than Ward. And honestly, the guy in Chicago this year too, but it's a really, really tough spot. And they've kind of gotten exposed in the back end with a little bit without Denzel Ward, but it's a huge piece that's coming back. And like you said, Myles Garrett makes everybody else's lives easier. I think Dalvin Tomlinson, the defensive tackle, is really the key cog in this defense, because he just eats double teams. It's hard to run on them. It makes lives easier for Garrett, Za'Darius Smith, no more Okoronkwo, but other pass rushers around him. I think he is kind of the key cog with Garrett, but the expectation defensively, it's hard to expect a big change. It's been the catalyst for this team all year.
I mean, my goodness, the litany of injuries that have become like season-ending ones. I mean, you hear about Maurice Hurst the other day, and then the Okoronkwo one. I want to focus on that because I know he's their third edge rusher. But when you look at the splits where Myles Garrett's playing about, what, 81% of snaps a season, and then like Z and Okoronkwo are somewhere in that 55, 56 range. Like, when you lose that third edge rusher and Myles Garrett's on a 3-game drought of not having a sack, like, how do they compensate there? Because that feels like a pretty big task when this is somebody who has eaten up a lot of snaps, helping Myles Garrett come through, you know, last couple of weeks dealing with a shoulder injury. What's the game plan for them as far as that loss? Because it, I know they didn't rule him out at, like, for the season, but it's a pec injury, and that's not something as a defensive end that you're typically wanting to play through. But how do they go about compensating for what is a considerable loss up front?
I think, honestly, they're going to send more pressure. And I think you can afford to do that with Denzel Ward coming back. They're one of the most man-heavy teams in the entire NFL. Sometimes that means sending four. Sometimes it means sending five. Sometimes it even means sending six. But Jim Schwartz can have a lot more confidence in their secondary, especially with Denzel Ward back this week, to add an extra guy or two to the rush, to not have to worry about what you're losing on the edge for Okoronkwo. And you brought up a great point, because the Browns have been good against the run this year, and that forces teams into the third and medium, third and long. And that's when you can get into the sub package with Okoronkwo, Za'Darius Smith, and Myles Garrett all out there. So if they continue to do that, you are losing a key piece on the biggest downs of the game.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting really to see. And I look at, you know, the trenches is going to be the matchup in this game. Bears, of course, lose Yannick Ngakoue coming into this week. But there's an interesting matchup that I really want to key in on, because Montez Sweat is now, without Yannick out there, probably going to get his pick on the side. And I personally think he's going to take on Jerod Christian here, because former Commander, he's seen this guy in practice before. Maybe a little bit, I already know how to beat this guy. How are the Browns going to protect Joe Flacco this week, who is a lot less mobile, has come out and played really well, but
yeah,
he's kind of, I mean, 39 years old. He's no spring chicken no more. He's a little bit of a statue in the pocket. And the Bears have really found a way to dial up pressure, even without Yannick out there, and be able to get some pressure around that quarterback.
I think it comes down to a couple things. The biggest thing, and Eric and I harp on this every single week when we talk, maybe it's because he's a running back and he believes so much in the run game, but you stay ahead of the chains, run the ball efficiently on first and even second down. You avoid those pure third and long situations where pass rushers can just pin their ears back and go get the quarterback. And that's where Montez Sweat excels for sure. And Jerod Christian, interestingly enough, like, he's been okay this year. What I've seen, at least, noticeably better run blocking. So if you can just avoid the situations at least as much as possible where he has to just pass set and go one-on-one, that is probably the best. Avoiding the situation is the best to go about it. But they've shown they're not afraid to put a tight end or running back in and go chip a pass rusher. I mean, outside of the second Steelers game of the year, like, they've had really good games against elite pass rushers like Josh Allen, TJ Watt, Alex Highsmith. They've done a good job with chipping. And now, like, they lose DeJuan Jones for the year, and obviously he was only playing because they lost Jack Conklin for the year. And Jedrick Wills has been out for the past couple weeks, and there was a hope that he'd come back. He was only on IR for 4 weeks. They announced he's out. It's a battered tackle room, so avoiding those third and longs is going to be the biggest key. The best way to neutralize a good pass rusher is just limit the amount of opportunities he can get to just rush the passer.
Yeah.
I mean, the O-line injuries have been like a storyline for this Cleveland team. And Ethan Pocic, their center, is dealing with a stinger. So who knows as far as like the recovery time from that. But he didn't practice on Wednesday. How do you have this many offensive line injuries, yet four different quarterbacks this season that have all gotten wins? And we take a look at what they were able to do with Joe Flacco last week. To throw for 300 plus yards, the protection must have been good enough in certain circumstances to allow him to do that. What's been the workaround here to battle off some of these injuries and still be productive as a passing unit?
It's honestly different from quarterback to quarterback. Like, when you had PJ Walker and Dorian Thompson-Robinson coming in when Deshaun Watson was nursing the shoulder injury with the expectation that he would be back, it was a lot of getting the QB on the move, making high-low reads, just looking in the flat and either checking it down or throwing it over the top. Like, they're making life really simple for PJ Walker and Dorian Thompson-Robinson. And it's similar with Joe Flacco, but Joe Flacco has been in the league enough where he can identify a blitz that's coming, change the protection, check to a different play. There's a lot that Joe Flacco can do within the pocket pre-snap line of scrimmage that those guys couldn't do. So I think he does kind of make up for that lack of mobility with what he can do at the line of scrimmage. Although I will say there were a couple plays last week where Joe Flacco looked a lot more spry than I thought he would. There was a nice little play. Where he broke the pocket, threw the ball 15 yards down the field on the run. Like, I was like, I, I haven't seen this in a decade. Like it was pretty insane. But I do think the biggest thing offensively has just been adapting to the quarterbacks, and knock on wood, the offensive playmakers, the pass catchers for the Browns have been healthy and they've looked really good, especially with Flacco. They've looked really good. David Njoku has been playing really well. Amari Cooper had 14 targets last week. I don't remember the last time a Browns receiver had that many targets. It's nice to see. And I honestly think a lot of credit goes to Kevin Stefanski and the offensive staff for really putting them in good positions. Because again, you lose three starting tackles, one of the best running backs in the NFL, and your starting quarterback. You're like, how is this offense scoring more than 10 points a game? It's the coaching staff. These guys are put in really, really good positions to succeed, especially offensively.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about, you know, some of the playmakers there. I mean, does it feel like, you mentioned the coaching staff, but does it feel like Flacco just has more of a confidence and a willingness to get it to him, right? David Njoku's been a guy who I loved Njoku coming out of college. Yeah. I've liked him up and down with the Browns because of how up and down he's been with the Browns. But a lot of times, right, it's just we're not throwing the football his way. Last week comes away 6 receptions, 91 yards, 2 tutties. Joe Flacco kind of used him as a safety blanket. You mentioned Amari Cooper as well, right? Like, is it just more of a willingness on Flacco's part, more of a confidence in I've done this for, you know, 15 years now, pretty much. Like, it's nothing new to me to go out there and just get these guys involved, because all of a sudden it feels like an offense that is, I want to say, that's woken up just because we're actually getting the ball to these pieces.
I think so too. And I think the Browns were not stuck in their ways with the other quarterbacks playing, but you think of Cleveland Browns offensive football, you think an identity of running the ball 60%+ of the time, just pounding the rock, letting your defense go play and win the field position battle. Like, that's what it was for the first two thirds of the year. But now, like, you have, again, a quarterback who's confident. He still has a very good arm, he has good pocket presence. Like, he can still throw the ball within the pocket. And I slowly think the Browns are starting to realize they can't run the ball as efficiently as they thought without Nick Chubb. I think Jerome Ford, efficiency-wise, has been great, but he's still splitting touches with Kareem Hunt. And Kareem Hunt adds another aspect of the power, and he's very good in pass protection. Like, you can't keep just one of them on the field. You kind of got to alternate in certain situations. But I think their running backs have not really had an opportunity to get into a significant rhythm. And I honestly think, just you look at what their offense can do, the players on their offense, you're playing to the strengths right now, and that's the pass game instead of the run game.
So the equation of, like, roster construction and how creative the Browns have gotten with using what is effectively the 54th roster spot, like, Joe Flacco came in here, you know, from the couch to the practice squad, and then he reverted back. He kept going back and forth from, like, starter to the practice squad simply as a way to maneuver to keep him on the team. And now, after Sunday's game, immediately Kevin Stefanski says he's our starter for the rest of the season. We know the history between where Flacco had one of his best seasons in a Gary Kubiak offense, Kevin Stefanski with the Minnesota Vikings when Gary Kubiak was a senior offensive advisor and then ends up being the OC after Kevin leaves. That was the years that I covered the team. That influence is there. And I'm wondering, as far as the things that Flacco is going to be expected to do now after what feels like a renaissance sort of performance, how does the offense then change from what we saw earlier in the year, whether it was Deshaun Watson, whether it was DTR, even PJ Walker in moments? Does it feel like Flacco is going to be able to operate this scheme better than the other quarterbacks because it's a scheme that's more tailored to his strengths?
I think it is. And I think just the scheme, again, as well as the overall, like, personnel that's around him, like, not having a healthy center, not having a good run blocking right tackle anymore, not having Nick Chubb, like, it's tailored to Joe Flacco, yes, but it's also tailored to the strengths of the team. And I think Amari Cooper is very underrated. Like, I think you watch him go out one-on-one with against a lot of corners, not a lot of corners can cover him. Obviously, David Njoku was a matchup nightmare. Like, he's 6'6", and run like the wind. But I think the scheme has been tailored to Flacco a little bit. And the history of the offense could totally mean, like, the verbiage used in the Kubiak offense, it could totally mean checks that they've made. And if that's a comfort thing with Flacco, that makes it even easier.
Yeah. And okay, so, like, why did it take 7 years into his career and all these weeks into this season for David Njoku to have a multiple touchdown game? Is it just, to Pat's point, that, you know, you got a veteran quarterback in there who knows how to utilize his personnel. I mean, he even got Elijah Moore going last week.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Njoku matchup, this feels like one that the Browns have just, you know, been waiting and waiting and waiting to utilize. And then it finally happens against a very good Jags defense last week. Why did that take so long?
I think it's a combination of things. I think on the Browns end specifically, there has been no continuity at quarterback. So it's hard to expect somebody, especially in an offense when there was continuity with Baker Mayfield, that was all over the place. You had Nick Chubb getting 20 touches a game. You had Odell and Jarvis Landry. Like, there were too many mouths to feed in that offense for him to expect those big games like that. Honestly, the Jaguars have really struggled against tight ends this year. I think that was totally a part of it. And I think the third and one play action, 30-yard shot down the field where literally nobody was covering David Njoku was very much a play call thing. Like, it was great to see. It was a third and one, I think, at the 34-yard line. And the way the Browns have been moving offensively this year, they probably go for that on fourth down. So Kevin Stefanski thinks, okay, why not take a shot here and blown coverage? Like, I think it's a combination of a lot of things, but the biggest hand in it is certainly Flacco. Like, I think he has a confidence instilled within some of these receivers and tight ends that if they run the right route, if they do the right thing, they will be open and he will get them the ball. I think even with Deshaun Watson, that was not the case, or it had not been the case very often this year.
Now, here's the major question with this Browns offense, right? Because if we're being 100% honest, even with the injuries, you feel better about it having Myles Garrett out there. Yes, there's some major losses, but Myles Garrett, of course, is the catalyst. You expect this defense to keep playing at a certain level that has helped them get to this 6-1 record at home. On the offensive side, though, how does Kevin Stefanski keep the magic of Flacco going? Because, listen, we've all watched Flacco the last 5-6 years. We've been here. There's 2 weeks, 3 weeks of magical play. Oh, he's still got it. He can move. He's throwing the football. And then he slowly reverts to Joe Flacco and we go, oh, never mind. That was a fun 3 weeks, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right. I think with the Jets, it was like, all right, let's get Mike White back in there. Let's see if we can get some more magic out of him. All right, throw Zach back in there, right? Like, how do the Browns keep this magic going with Flacco?
Well, I think looking at the past couple of years, there was no belief instilled in Flacco, and Kevin Stefanski, like we talked about, said he's a starter for the rest of the year. So that aspect of the equation is completely out of it. I also think that aspect of the equation plays in the hand of the fact that the Browns have no other options at quarterback. Like, you can start Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who honestly I thought was making good strides, but Flacco's better. Flacco is the guy. I honestly think it comes down to continually utilizing your personnel in the best ways possible. And that's what it's been the past couple weeks, especially this week against a Bears run defense. That's, I think it's last 5 weeks, second in the NFL in rush yards allowed, a third in the NFL in yards per carry allowed. Like, they can stop the run. So it's going to be a drop back game for the Browns. Kind of have to be, but continually utilizing that personnel, finding your mismatches and just continuing to scheme up things for these players to get open. And you scheme up, you'd have a game plan that Flacco trusts as a whatever 18-year vet, he will execute. That's what I think, at least. And if it's zone, he's seen millions of different zone concepts over the years. If it's man, I like the receivers that the Browns have, even the tight ends that the Browns have. I think Flacco knows where his matchups are in those cases as well. So I think it's more of a scheme and continuing to believe Browns offensively, they have some advantage and maximizing the advantage to the best possible. Because last week against the Jaguars, like, they couldn't run the ball either. The Jaguars' run defense has been pretty solid all year, but big mismatches in the secondary, and they took advantage continually.
Yeah, 100%. It's going to be really interesting to see kind of what they try to do to get this ground game going. Do you expect a little bit of, like the Bears did last week, a little bit of trickery? A little bit of there's Courtney.
Sorry, little internet issues here at Hallis Hall, but we're all good now.
Hey, as long as those are the only issues we got going on in Hallis Hall, I'm fine with that. But no, right? Like, how do you expect them? Because with this Bears run defense, the Bears have been really stout. Big Bill up the middle, Andrew Billings has really taken away a lot in the middle. And you mentioned the inconsistencies on the run. Is that going to be a focus, or is there going to be an abandonment kind of the run where you use it to try and, like, say, we're still willing to run the football, but Joe Flacco's airing this out all day?
It's been interesting to see that the run percentage has gone down with Flacco, but again, the efficiency has gone up. So I think very, very crucial thing is the Browns stay ahead of the chains. Like we talked about, if you're behind the chains, just in general, but especially with a beat up offensive line against a good defensive line, you're in trouble. So I think first, second down, it probably will be a point of emphasis. And then if they can do it well enough on first, second down, they've shown the past couple weeks, especially with Flacco, they are not afraid to just fake a play action and throw it over the top. So if they can get that going, it'll play into future play calls as the game goes on. But the only way I see a true abandonment is if they're trailing. And
yeah,
it's very much on like Kevin Stefanski to truly abandon the run. But who gets the majority of the carries, how often they get the carries, that is, I have no idea. It's been the story like that all year. Like you have Jerome Ford, I think it was the Broncos game, 8 yards a carry. And he touched the ball 7 times, I think. It was pretty insane. So the running back room, the running situation is super unpredictable, but I would be shocked if they truly abandoned it.
We know about that here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good point, too.
We know about that.
I know that it won't affect the Bears this weekend, but you got to think about the timing for Grant Delpit. Signs a 3-year extension, $36 million. Hours later, suffers a season-ending groin injury. But it doesn't sound like it's truly regular season ending because he's going to IR.
Correct.
But big picture wise, this is an 8-5 team, probably needs two more wins to be able to lock up that wild card spot potentially in the AFC North, because we know that where Baltimore is and they're going for the one seed, and that's probably their best path in as the 5. Does it kind of feel like this team's going to be held together by like glue sticks and scotch tape if they get to the postseason, considering all of these injuries and all of the shuffling that they've had to do? And how does that make them, at least when we were trying to project this, how does that make them appear as a playoff contender? Are they a dangerous team? Are they just a team that's probably going to be a one and done once they get into the postseason, considering the injury issues? How do you forecast what type of playoff threat the Browns might be in a couple weeks?
Well, I think right now, like if you look at the roster construction, assuming there are no more significant injuries and assuming Grant Delpit is back for the playoffs, it's a team that I don't think anybody would want to play because of how hard they play defensively. Mm-hmm. Like I think there's a lot of teams in the AFC that would hesitate to want to play the Browns because of how tough they will play you. And again, super unpredictable on offense. Sometimes that's a good thing. They're unpredictable on offense. I don't think it's a team that other AFC teams would want to see. It probably will take 2 wins to get in. It's Chicago, I believe. It's Houston, New York, and Bengals. The Bengals are the last game. I think New York and Houston are flipped, actually. But those are the 4 teams. And, you know, you look at some of the teams the Browns have beaten this year, like those are 4 winnable games. And the reality of the situation is, even if this team is barely sticking together, they could finish with 11 wins. And I hate to even look ahead to the AFC North crown, but if Baltimore slips up, it's not going to take much for the Browns to jump them. And the AFC is as unpredictable as ever this year. I'm sure you all know that. Any team can truly beat any team. It's very open. I think the Browns, with their best shot, can beat any team in the AFC. Will they get their best shot in the playoffs? Will they even make the playoffs? The real question. But will they get their best shot in the playoffs? I don't know. Tough to tell right now. But again, I think it's a team, assuming they do make the playoffs, that not a lot of teams would genuinely want to play.
The one thing about this Browns defense that I've noticed, and I think it is going to help them long term in the AFC and even in this game versus Chicago Bears, is they made an adjustment on how they handle mobile quarterbacks. Because early in the year, I mean, listen, it was a free-for-all with guys being able to get away, just getting away from Myles Garrett, being able to get away from this defense as a whole and use their legs to extend plays to open up throws, use their legs to extend plays to get down the field. What adjustment did you see that was basically made to where this Browns defense has been able to kind of keep some of these guys a little bit more under wraps?
Well, I think it's 2 things. One, like on the field physically, defensively, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, who I think is probably the most athletic linebacker in the NFL, is playing unbelievable football. Like you tell him to go eye in on Lamar Jackson, that's his job, he'll do it. It's been pretty special to see. He's playing really, really good football. But one thing the Browns have really, really excelled with, and that's how they've beaten teams like the Ravens, the 49ers, is controlling the football. Like the less you have the other quarterback out there, the less plays they can make. And I know defensively, it's a big thing. You want to contain a guy like Justin Fields. You want to contain a guy like Lamar Jackson. Don't let him run. At the end of the day, if they don't have the football, they can't run. And the Browns have been really good at controlling the time of possession, limiting those elite quarterbacks in terms of the physical amount of plays and amount of snaps that they have. It's the old-fashioned way to beat the Patriots. It's how teams have beat the Chiefs this year. Just keep them off the field. Don't let them try to make plays. And it's tough to get into a rhythm if that's the case as well.
Mm-hmm. The turnovers, are they an issue? Yeah. Is it a symptom of the last couple of weeks? I know that Joe Flacco threw two interceptions in the last two games, yeah, one each. But then the fumbles that he had, yeah, Amari Cooper had, then Jacksonville goes down and scores a touchdown off of that. That seems uncharacteristic and maybe just sloppy, but also there's 8 penalties for 75 yards. Like, is that a symptom, yeah, of bigger issues within this team? Is that something that was just, you know, chalk it up to, you know, a hard-fought game against the Jacksonville Jaguars? What is that? Because, you know, that's something the Bears have been incredibly opportunistic in terms of forcing takeaways the last, yeah, couple of weeks, and that could play into their advantage if this is a sign of a continual problem for Cleveland.
Penalties have been less of an issue for me. I think the way the Browns play, they naturally are so aggressive, mm-hmm, that they're able to make certain plays without penalties being called, and you can kind of live with the penalties, especially in the back end, the pass interferences and things like that. You can almost live with those if they're continuing to make plays on the football like they are when they're not getting called. Turnovers have been an issue all year. Like, you turn the ball over, I want to say the Jaguars got one in the red zone, and to the other one that they returned into Browns territory. The turnovers have been bad. The timing of the turnovers has been 10 times worse. And I know watching some of that Bears-Lions game, like, the Bears super opportunistic with forcing turnovers, and they get the ball in good field position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I told my friends, watching the Browns game, the Browns legitimately did everything they could to lose the game and still found a way to win. And that's kind of been the key this year. But turnovers at bad times, turnovers in bad spots, that has been an issue. And, you know, the fumbles, the quarterback fumbles, it's kind of a protection thing, in my opinion. But the pick that Joe Flacco threw, it's just miscommunication. I don't know if you, yep, guys saw it. It was defender ran into a receiver. Like, you could have called a flag either way. Like, it was just a big free for all. And, you know, you kind of got to live with that. And the other pick that Flacco threw last week was a shot on first down, which I don't know. I have my own opinion about that, but it wasn't a great pass. But again, they've been doing this all year and they're still finding ways to win. So I guess you can't complain.
Listen, it's been a magical season for the Browns. Maybe they'll get a little, yeah, squeeze a little bit more of that Joe Flacco magic out. I mean, listen, his Super Bowl run was magical. So maybe, yes, there's that in their future. That'd be interesting to see.
That was a long time ago, Pat.
Long time ago. Yes. But still magical. It doesn't change the magic. The magic, yeah, happened, right? It's just a little bit older magic now. It's less dust. or more dust, I guess. But at the end of the day, I think, honestly, we're about to see two teams that, when you kind of start to look at them and look at how both defenses have developed, they're doing the Spider-Man meme right now. There's questions, yeah, on the offense. They've got solid defenses. They're both going to come out here. What's your expectation on how this game plays out? Do you have the Browns winning? Do you have the Bears winning? What are your thoughts here?
I do have the Browns winning. And to be honest with you, I think the difference in the game is the home field advantage. Like, the Browns, mm-hmm, have been, it's insane. Like, I believe in home field advantage, not to this extent. They have just been exponentially better at home. I don't know if it's the fans. I don't know if it's familiarity, the noise, whatever it may be. But they defensively especially play really, really well at home. And even though the Browns are beat up, I think the addition of Denzel Ward, I don't know if you can say makes up for the loss that they have, but it's probably the biggest addition you could have outside of Myles Garrett. And offensively, I trust them. I do think if this was the old Browns where they were running the ball 25, 30 times a game, it would honestly be a tougher matchup. Because they're more comfortable airing it out now, I think they can play into that strength. So I do think the Browns win, but I do think it will be a very, very good game. I mean, obviously, Justin Fields is playing good football. DJ Moore, I personally think, is playing like one of the five best receivers in the NFL this year. I'm a big fan of DJ Moore's game. And defensively, they just continue to force turnovers and put the Bears in good situations.
Hey, I'm hoping you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong. And I'm going to say this. Every time I pick the Bears to win, I don't think that we have. So I'm going to stick with what I got going. I also have the Bears. I think this is an interesting uphill matchup. I think a lot of things play in the Browns' favor. So I'm going to go I think close game, say 21-24 Browns. I think I said that last week for the Lions game, and it worked out in our favor. So let's see if that reverse psychology stays up. Courtney, what are your thoughts? What do you think?
I have the Browns winning 27-21. And I know the spread on this game was probably smaller than most people would have thought going in. Yeah. But again, the injury issues, like this is the number one defense in the NFL, yet you take a look at the injury report from Wednesday and it's DNP, 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 which factors into what is their depth going to, how is their depth going to be tested? How's the Bears' depth going to be tested? Like, we know that the Bears' pass rush has come along these last couple of weeks, but that's because you had two good, one great pass rusher in Montez Sweat that allowed Unique Ngakoue to play a different way and play more confident in that scheme. Now that you take him out, what does that do for that matchup with Sweat? How much more added attention is he going to get? How effective can this pass rush stay? So I don't know if they're going to get after the quarterback as much as they had in previous weeks. I don't know how many that's why I brought up the turnovers and all of the, you know, the issues there with this offense. I don't know how many more times like you're going to get a Jared Goff keep putting it on the ground sort of game when Joe Flacco has been able to bounce back from those and still lead this team to win. So I've got it as a one score game. I do have the Browns winning though, because you're right, Max, like the stats that have been pointed out about how much better this defense is playing at First Energy Stadium. It's just, it's wild. And sometimes there's like no real rhyme or reason to it, but it's notable this year for sure.
Yeah, it has been massive seeing the difference from home and away. So that I think that home record gets a little boost. Let's hope that we're all wrong. Well, I guess for you, you hope you're right. But no, I'm hoping you're wrong. Appreciate you joining us, Max. Let them know where they can find you. Drop all your socials, all that good stuff, man.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you guys for having me. It was a lot of fun.
No problem.
My socials are all the same: TikTok, Instagram, X. It's Loebs Leads, LOEBSLEADS.
All right. Make sure you guys tune in with him. Great insight, great breakdown, and of course, a great podcast as well. As always, it's your boy Pat the Designer, joined by Courtney Cronin. Eye on the Enemy episode complete. Let's go get a dub versus the Dog Pound. Y'all stay safe out there. Peace.